Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I sent a text. I guess you didn't
get it. Am I still
in my leg? I had a rash on my leg, and I didn't hear from you. So I, you know.
Is there a doctor on board?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can handle this.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a doctor of humane letters. Oh, God, another one.
Well, my wife's so unimpressed, by the way. It's like, well, they just gave it to him. It's like an honorary. It doesn't mean anything.
Yes, it's honorary.
He's a doctor.
I had the same experience. I was like, hey, Tony's a doctor. And my wife was like, what did he do for it? I was like, he's famous. What does he do for it?
Why you gotta be hating on the franchise?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
And I am still a doctor.
She's still unimpressed.
Yeah. Gary Braun is here. Barry Zwerluga back from the wars. The playoff wars is here as the Washington teams just took gas. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is running the board. David Aldridge will join us later from Cleveland. We are at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest, a block inside the District of Columbia line. Where last night, instead of the terrible Chad sign that's still outside, a few people at Trivia covered it with a paper sign Chatter, which made me extraordinarily happy. Of course, it blew off in the middle of the night, so we don't have it, but it was made me happy. So
when I plugged into my phone to get directions here, to come here for the first time, I tried punching in Chadwick's.
Right.
It did not come
dating
up.
Yourself.
Right.
Dating myself, exactly.
Right.
As an old school Upper Northwest
like the
person.
Parking sign, I pass everything.
If I punched in Chatter, and there it was.
That's fabulous. Well, we had a sign for, I'd say, an hour. Michael, about an hour and a half.
Tweeted up there. Tweeted out there.
Cooley and Claire got it done.
That's very nice. And by the way, we need servers, and we're open for breakfast, and people are here every day.
Nice crowd this morning.
Makes me very happy. Let us start with the Golden State Warriors. They go fo. They're up 65-51 at the half. They shoot 58% for the game.
Is that
58%
good?
58% of the game, yeah. They're plus 87 since Kawhi Leonard went out. In three games plus, they're plus 87. There's no contest here.
Nope.
Popovich knew they were going to lose. He started Manu Ginobili in what might very well be Manu Ginobili's last game ever in the NBA, and certainly his last game, if that's true, in San Antonio. That's, you know, the playoffs stink. They stink.
Boring.
Michael Wilbon takes such delight in saying how bad the NFL playoffs are, even when they're not bad. But these playoffs are awful. Kevin Durant said, this is a direct quote, if you don't like it, don't watch, because the games have
been
terrible.
Mission accomplished over here.
The games have been terrible by and large. There's a few good games. Washington game two. Overtime game,
right.
Isaiah Thomas throwing in 53. Yeah, there's a few good games. The John Wall game, game six.
Right.
Sure, okay. And everybody in every city, well, not if you're playing Golden State. You haven't had a lot of really good games. But you get the teams you want.
Yeah.
You get Cleveland and Golden State, and it's exactly what you want.
You could resurrect the whole thing in, beginning June 1st. You could resurrect
the
whole
thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, the whole thing could be saved if we have a seven-game series between the two teams that everybody
wanted.
Right.
It doesn't
in
even
October.
Have to be seven if the games are good.
Right, true.
It doesn't have
games.
To be. I mean, but I think what the NBA should have done last week was, what Sonny did. Just start throwing 20s down at these teams and just say, you're out now. You're done. Go home now.
Intentional walk.
People want to watch this other matchup. They want to watch Cleveland against Golden State. I mean, because this has been awful. And by the way, Greg Popovich, who mouthed off about manslaughter the other day with Zaza Pachulia.
He didn't help him. Not that they were going to win the series.
They weren't going to
win a game.
But when he's, then they lose game two and he blames his team for not believing they could win after he told everybody in the world, we can't win the series. What did you think of that?
This guy has, with Phil Jackson not coaching, here's the Zen master that's on the sideline now, right? I mean, he's taking the mantle at USA Basketball from Mike Krzyzewski. He is, in a lot of ways, regarded as the most accomplished, and not only just most accomplished, but the guy whose message as a basketball coach is the most important, and he apparently...
And also his political messages.
Well, right. I mean, so you mix all this stuff in.
He's a self-inflated human being at this point.
Well, he is somebody who certainly seems to regard himself as larger than basketball, larger than just the situation.
But there's an interesting...
I mean, he's earned this.
Yes.
He's earned this, but he's also embraced it, much like me.
But there is a phenomenon, isn't there, with NBA coaches in particular. Like, I think of...
Belichick as sort of, you know, the guy at the top of the mountain in the NFL. But but with the NBA guys, it seems to me when they reach this certain status, they are completely unquestioned. Like at the end of the Super Bowl, the Malcolm Butler Super Bowl, people said, you know, Belichick, people had the opinion that he froze, he messed up, he let them sort of work the clock, and then it sort of worked out for him. But guys like Pop and Phil Jackson, it seems to me they're like never
Pat Riley was never
questioned.
No,
they
never.
Can do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I don't know why the difference is between the two sports, but Popovich has, I do think that when you view him, you know, there's so many people in the stick to sports camp. Right. So you can't view him just as an X and O bat or a motivational guy because he is so outspoken on social issues.
And good for him.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, I would be in the camp that's great. But I think when you evaluate him, his opinions on how to motivate his team or his assessment of a series feels weightier or can't be completely separated from the fact that he also brings all this other kind of baggage.
He hurt his team in this series.
That may be true.
They weren't going to win the series anyway, but he hurt his team by saying, you know, we're in no position to win with Kawhi Leonard out, and then yelling at his team
because
you just can't do that. And the series was completely pointless. And by the way, the Boston series against Cleveland is pointless. What we're going to get is the point. Yeah, we're going to get the series that we want between two great teams.
And that you knew a year ago.
Led by great players.
Yeah.
I mean, the collection of players in this are great, and the level of basketball we expect to be great. Maybe not in the first game after that much of a layoff, but after that, I think it should be great.
Well, think about, you know, I mean, people of a certain age will harken back to those Lakers-Celtics finals.
Absolutely.
And think about the collection
of
talent
there.
You're
players.
Talking about mm-hmm. Bird and Magic and McHale and Worthy and Parrish and Abdul-Jabbar. Yeah. I mean, it's just, and the ancillary players were Danny Ainge and Dennis Johnson and Jamal Wilkes and like, that's, I mean, I don't know how this will be viewed in 20 years, but...
Big deal.
Yeah, kind of a big deal, I think.
Big deal.
Classic.
Kyrie Irving is a great player. Kevin Love is a multi-time all-star.
Right.
LeBron James, if he wins this one, don't talk to me about how he's not in the Jordan class.
And you haven't mentioned...
Because that would be seven in a row.
Right.
And then, and on the other side, Durant and Curry
and
Green and Thompson... These are great players.
Great players. And the role players
Thompson's
are great
dad
players.
Used to play for the Lakers.
Yeah, right. In those, he was a Showtime Laker, right?
Yeah.
Michael Thompson.
So, yes. So we want to see that. And I...
And you will.
And we will next year.
Yes, exactly.
It's going to be... What is today's date?
Today's the 23rd of May, Tony. The finals start Thursday, the 1st of June.
It's a long time when you're just waiting for Cleveland to win and there's no other interest.
Well, maybe you think maybe the NBA could move it up?
Here's what I think.
It's a good idea.
Okay, so having talked about
that.
This yesterday,
just to throw an idea
a
out there
for chatter.
I don't understand why they can't. Now, obviously, they don't want to, but I don't understand why they can't. And this is why. This is what I'm talking about. The NFL has a Super Bowl, and they announce when it is going to be and where it is going to be years in advance.
Neutral or
in every
possibly.
Other sport, there is always the question of where the games will be played because you have two. Best of seven series heading into the finals. So you're never certain. You're never certain where it's going to be. Four cities are in play all the time. You clear out the arenas. You understand how to do this because the four cities are in play. Given the fact that the four cities are in play and given the fact that it's very easy to set up Cleveland and Golden State because they've done it before, I don't know why they can't move it up.
So, but as somebody who... has a history in TV and understands television, not only as a consumer, but as a participant.
Yeah.
Is there not, I'm not saying this is a legitimate reason, but I don't know that it's so much the arenas as ABC wants, we want it on a Thursday and a Sunday for games one and two. It's a programming
You can
thing.
Get that. You can still do that.
Well,
you're going
you can't
to,
do it unless you start this Thursday.
Fine. You're going to have the series you want. You're going to have the teams you want. This is ratings gold. The more you delay it, the more you run the risk.
I don't disagree
that people
with that.
Turn away.
I'm just saying. I'm sure that the networks are behind this, not the arena.
Is there an opposite side to that coin? There's no argument that this provides more time to hype it, more time to promote it.
Oh my gosh! If I were a sports writer,
no, you
in
get
Cleveland
bored out of
or
your mind.
Oakland. with I'm looking at eight days to fill. I'm gonna like
no, you're going crazy.
There's only
you're taking vacation.
It's just brutal. What do you do? Like, how do you fill that space? That's hard.
This is a very bad idea. It won't hurt because people want to see these players. Right. They know these players and
Correct.
Like these players.
Correct.
This is not like San Antonio where they were not particularly likable players because they were not effusive in any way. I mean, Draymond Green and Steph Curry are very, very likable. And even if you don't like Draymond Green, he's a compelling figure.
Yeah, I don't know that I would describe him
James
as very likable.
He's it.
But again,
this would be seven straight finals.
If you rank the most compelling players in the league, I mean, James and Curry are probably 1-2. 1-2.
Westbrook.
Right? Durant, I mean, you could argue that the thing is kind of a referendum on Durant.
100%.
He came to a 73-win team that lost the finals, and he's supposed to be one of the best players in the league.
He is the person that puts them over the top.
Right. Yeah. So
if
then
they win, it will be, okay, it was expected, and if they lose, it will be, well, Durant didn't help you that much, did he?
Right.
May not be that good, is he?
Exactly.
Which would be wrong, because he is that good.
Right, but the point is, if you take the top, the players in the NBA with the top 10 storylines, how many are in this series? 4, 5, 6, something like that.
Yeah. And a very interesting point is this, the saga of Steve Kerr,
which is
going to be written about and filmed time and time and time again, and the pressure on Mike Brown.
But so if you go,
who, by the way, was fired from Cleveland by LeBron James.
If you go back though to what we were talking about Popovich and Belichick getting criticized, I mean, and I don't know enough about Mike Brown to comment one way or the other. But it does leave you with the feel, if Golden State goes on to win and Steve Kerr is not on the sidelines, it leaves you, we know that the NBA is a player-driven product. But it does, it has to leave you with the feeling that, well, how important is the coach? Is the coach in game? Is the whole, the players, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know how important the coach could be.
Wilbon says this all the time, and he's 100% right. These players have been looking at the other team and playing against the other team all year.
Correct.
They're waiting for this. This is,
in this particular matchup.
We're going to end our NHL coverage today.
Wow.
Shortly after we begin it by announcing that the Nashville Predators, much to my great delight, have made the NHL Stanley Cup Final.
Who's their coach?
It's yet to be determined. I have no idea who
Peter Laviolette.
This is the first time they've been since Trotz took them several times, right?
Barry Trotz, who came to this city and was anointed as the greatest coach in the history of hockey.
This story gets better all the time.
And who has done zero here in the playoffs. Zero in the playoffs. He's had two. In 3 years, he's twice led the league and won the President's Trophy, but has done zero in the playoffs. Nothing more than any other coach ever did here. He came here with this reputation of being so great at Nashville, and if you looked it up, you found out he never got to the conference finals in Nashville, never once. And now Nashville, in the brief afterglow of Barry Trotz leaving,
3 years later,
they're there, they're in the finals
as the 8th seed.
So when you want to tell me how great Trotz, when you want to tell me you've got to get rid of Ovechkin, but you've got to keep Trotz, I just want to tell you this.
Well, credit to Robert Berg, who tweeted last night, I was going to tweet, cheer up Caps fans, an 8th seed just made the finals, which shows how random hockey is, but I don't think that helps.
Well, okay, there is a serious element of this. I mean, we have Barry Trotz's future with the Caps is not completely secure.
I'm stunned by that. He won the President's Trophy twice.
So, but what do we know about hockey in this town? They're not going to have a President's Trophy raising ceremony next year. I mean, that's no one cares
anymore.
Drop it
from the ceiling. Smash
it. There is a difference, as we know, between regular season success and playoff success in hockey. And I do think there are serious questions being asked at the Capitals front office about how does all this fit together and how did Trotz perform in the playoffs and why haven't any of his teams gotten to the third round?
You covered this stuff.
If I
gave you the chance and I said you have to jettison one of them, you have to. Are you getting rid of Ovechkin?
No.
Or getting rid of Trotz?
I'm not getting rid of Ovechkin.
Neither am I.
No, I would choose Trotz.
And
so that's
I mean,
but
and
you
I've
have
written
to have
critically
a solution
about
before you start
Ovechkin.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't. I'm not saying he's the perfect player, but I mean that is a extracting him from this town, this team. In that sport, it would be a monumental development.
And dumb, as far as I'm concerned.
True.
We will take a break. David Aldridge will join us from Cleveland to talk more about the NBA when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a SeatGeek read because we spend so much time on sports. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better and simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps of your phone. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. So you should make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports, concerts, comedy, theater. And best of all, listeners to this high-quality podcast, they're $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So then, theoretically, if you bought something for $18, they'd send you two in the mail, right? You'd get that free, and you'd get two in the mail.
Gary's the math
right?
guy.
Is that how it
By
works?
My math, yes, sir. My math, that sounds accurate.
That would be great. So just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony, T-O-N-Y, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This song is called Low Down and Dirty. It is sent in by Steve McEwen, who signs himself a math teacher in Waterford, California, and writes, "Back in the late 80s, I was in a band called Tempered Steel. We recorded these songs in 1989. Tommy, another song you sent in, is the required power ballad. Low Down and Dirty should have been a hit, but it wasn't. Since the days of the heavy metal band, I've played classic rock covers, Christian rock. I'm currently in a blues band. I'm on SoundCloud. I have two albums on iTunes. Hope you enjoy, Steve McEwen. All this music is good.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
All the time. David Aldridge joins us now. He is in Cleveland, where, by my reckoning, Game 3, had that been a Game 5 or a Game 6 of a championship series, people would have started comparing it to New England beating Atlanta in the Super Bowl. That was completely, it seemed to me, impossible for Boston to win that game, given they were on the road, they lost their best player, they got beat by 10,000 points the game before. Even Wilbon said he was surprised. even Wilbon said wow. He checked out, as I did after the first half, and took a nap. He said he awakened for the last 8 minutes or so. How surprising is that in the greater scheme of things?
It was a shock, given that it was... Not just that, you know, Cleveland hit nine threes in the first quarter. They were up 21 in the third quarter.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there was no sign that they weren't going to just continue steamrolling Boston like they had the first two games. So, you know, Boston, to their credit, I mean, they stuck with it. I mean, they kept coming. They played, you know, all the cliches about playing hard and all that sort of thing. I mean, they did do that, but I think Cleveland also let go of the rope a little bit. I mean, I think it just kind of checked out. And LeBron just had a bad game. I mean, there's no other way to put it. He just didn't play well. And so it was hard to kind of turn it on once Boston really started to chip away at the lead.
LeBron James, in all the years that we've seen him, he's not guardable. I mean, he's physically just not guardable. And when he wants to score, he almost always can score. From what I saw on replays from much of the fourth quarter, he wasn't even actually attempting to score. He had no points in the fourth quarter. I mean, when was – you can't remember that, right? Nobody can remember that.
No, I mean, this was one of those – you know, this is one of those old LeBron games that he would have sometimes in the playoffs where he, you know, he would settle for jumpers and, yep. and three-point shots and – instead of really, you know, imposing his will. He just wasn't part of it. I mean, he just wasn't engaged at all. And I don't know why that was. It's one of those games. I guess you could sort of explain it because Love got off to such a hot start and you thought, well, this is a game where Love's going to score 40,
yeah.
you know. And so maybe he, you know, and Irving played well. He had a good game. And I'm, maybe LeBron just thought, hey, I'm going to let these two guys carry it tonight. And then Love started missing. I mean, you know, they missed, I don't know the exact number. I think there was some like, you know, they were 11 of 22 on threes in the first half. And in the second half, they were like 2 of 17, something like that. So, I mean, it just, you know, the shots that they were making in the first half, they missed in the second.
You can't. It's unthinkable, right, that Boston will win game four. You can't imagine it, right? I can't imagine it.
You know, you certainly would think Cleveland's going to come, LeBron's going to come out with some purpose and energy and play downhill, and that makes it very difficult for Boston. I will say this. I think, you know, in a short series, while I wouldn't say over 82 games they're better off with Isaiah Thomas, I would say in a short series, I mean, it was just very difficult to hide him against Cleveland, you know, defensively. Now you've got Marcus Smart starting, who's a very good defensive player. Now, what you don't expect is for Smart to hit six threes again.
Right.
You know,
right,
I mean, that's
right.
Not, you don't expect that. And I'm sure that from a, you know, percentage standpoint, Cleveland's going to give him that shot, those shots again, and make him hit them again. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly expect Cleveland to win tonight and, you know, win the series ultimately, whether it's in five games or six.
Thank you for bringing up Isaiah Thomas. In the entire NBA this year, only one person, Russell Westbrook, outscored him in the fourth quarter. He won games. Anybody in Washington remembers game two where he got 53 and he won that game by himself. He was an all-star and deservedly so, and yet there is a lot of talk about trading him, David, because they can sign Gordon Hayward and then they have the number one draft pick. It could be a bouquet of riches if they trade him. Would you trade him?
Well, no, I wouldn't trade him right now, Tony, because I think he's a great player. And again, I think his ability to score in the fourth quarter is something that is helps you. It helps you get home court advantage. I mean, you can't turn your nose down at that. I mean, that his ability to do that is why they're the number one seed. You know, they won a bunch of games because he was unguardable in key moments. So, no, I wouldn't trade him right now. No, long term, you know, the question is, do you give him in a year when he's a free agent, do you give him $180, $200 million, which is what it's going to cost to re-sign him? And that's a different question. But that's not something you have to decide right now. So certainly not this summer I wouldn't trade him, because even if you draft Markelle Fultz, he's not going to be, you know, he's not going to come in and dominate
right
minute one, I don't think. So, you know, you're going to need Isaiah Thomas there. So, you know, I think his teammates, and I think this is important, I mean, I think his teammates really do care for him. I mean, they really, all of them said the same thing. You know, they got on FaceTime after the game with him the other night, and they all said it was so great to just see him smile again because of everything that's been going on with him, you know, the last month. You know, he was just happy for the first time in a long time, and they really do care for him.
You mentioned Markelle Fultz, who people think is the guy that Danny Ainge will draft for the Boston Celtics. Do you hear anything about that? I felt the other day that if Magic Johnson knew that he wanted somebody specifically, that Magic Johnson would be smart to try to trade up from 2-1. And Danny Ainge, if he wanted somebody different, would, of course, be happy to do that. What do you hear about that draft pick, or is it too early?
Well, I mean, look, I think everybody believes they're going to take Fultz.
Right.
I believe they're going to take Fultz. I'd be surprised if it was somebody else. But they don't have to do anything. Obviously, being number one, they can take whoever they want. They don't have to move up or they don't have to move
right
down, I should say. And I think L.A., as long as they get one of those point guards, I think they're fine. I don't think they care which one it is. I mean, well, I guess they probably would rather have Ball, but if it's Fultz, they're not going to be mad or trade out of the pick. I mean, the important thing is to get a point guard, no matter who it is. And while Ball certainly would fit the bill in L.A., and from a marketing standpoint, I don't think they're going to be, if they have any sense, they're not going to be mad if it's Markelle Fultz, because he's a heck of a player.
Reggie Miller was apparently on the PTI show the other day. I was not on it. Matt Kelleher told me about it and said that Reggie was very good, and he was very good on the subject of Lonzo Ball, and he said that kid's going to have a target on his back because of the dad. It's, do you hear that same thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's the, yeah, I agree with that completely. I mean, these are, you know, professional basketball players, something that LeVar Ball was not. You're not allowed to be told what's going to happen and how good somebody is and how this guy's going to dominate them and make $1 billion and all that sort of thing, and he's better than LeBron. And they, you know, that's just, that kind of talk just doesn't, that doesn't do the kid any favors. And I don't, you know, I think that he's good. I don't think he's, it's not going to be like he's in the seventh grade. He's going to get in a fight after school. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying,
right.
You know, he's going to, it's going to cause him, you know, he's going to have to bring it every night because everybody's going to try to prove themselves against him and shut the dad up, you know, and that's unfortunate.
It is. I mean, I'm of the opinion that the best thing that could happen to Lonzo Ball is if television networks understood there's no point in putting his dad on anymore. There's just none. Zero. And don't put him on, and that'll help the kid. I think it would help the kid at this point.
Yeah, yes, that's not going to happen.
No, it's not. No, it's not. His dad can get on TV whenever he wants. All right, we got Golden State in four. You lose Kawhi Leonard, you're going to lose the series. And I could go on and on and tell Greg Popovich that he didn't do anybody a favor with all the nonsense that he said. But Golden State's really, really good. I think that Cleveland will win in five. And then you face this long delay. I'm curious about this. Could the NBA, I'm sure that Turner and ESPN has the rights to the finals. I'm sure ESPN would be happy if it was moved up. Could they move this up and not have this long delay?
No, they're not moving. We've all asked that. But and I will say this, they were adamant about this well before, you know, these series started. They were adamant. June 1, they're starting at June 1. They're not moving it up. They're not moving it back. It's June 1. I don't know the reason for that. I suspect the reason for that is, you know, they have ancillary programming and marketing deals that all require a specific startup date. And so, you know, that's why they're sticking to it. But, yeah, they have been very clear about that for months, that they were not going to, that no matter what happened, they were not going to move the finals date up and they weren't going to move it back. They were starting it on June 1st, and they stuck to that.
I think they get lucky in the sense that this is the series that people want to see after what has been a bad playoff so far. They get lucky in that regard. But if by some incredible quirk of fate it had been Boston and San Antonio, I think they would have, with a long layoff.
Nashville and Ottawa?
Yeah. That's what it feels like, right? Doesn't it, David? I mean, I think they're lucky.
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, look, I think we all, you know, wrote in pen and in ink that it was going to be Cleveland and Golden State. I don't think anybody believed it wasn't going to be those two teams.
Only Wilbon at the beginning of the year went on and on.
So, you know, if it's anything else, and they're the two best teams in the league, and I think everybody believes that too. Sure. And so, you know, in the NBA especially, I think the NBA is fine if its two best teams meet in the finals and the season isn't very good. I mean, you know, Boston and L.A. back in the 80s. I mean, you know, that's okay. The league can do that because of the star power of those two teams. So if you were to have a monkey in the wrench and somebody else get to the finals, yeah, I think that would have been, especially this year, I think it would have been, you know, tough from a rating standpoint. Yeah. But I don't think that they have to worry about that now.
Here's who's tough from a rating standpoint. Kevin Durant telling people, if you don't like it, don't watch. I mean, if Adam Silver actually were alive, he could not have liked hearing that. If you don't like it, don't watch.
Made me think he's been listening to this show.
Don't watch. Really? I mean, did Kevin Durant think that he gets paid because of an act of Congress? Or does he understand? Yeah. You know.
I know, but, you know, I mean, I think they were getting you know, hammered about how boring the series was, and I guess his point is it's not our fault. I mean, you know, what do you want us to do? Not win by 20 when we can? You know, I mean, that's so I understand what his point is, but you're right. I mean, that obviously was not, you know, that's not what you want to hear. But I don't think it matters. The numbers, from what I understand, have been very good anyway. So, and again, I think it's because these two teams have very identifiable and recognizable and familiar faces on
100%.
Them, and people like watching them.
100%, and they're going to like watching Kevin Durant. I mean, this is the best. This, I'm sure you will agree with this. In a sense, this playoff is a referendum on Kevin Durant.
Oh, absolutely. I think
it's about
so.
Him.
Yeah, sure. And it's not that he will be blamed necessarily if Golden State doesn't win the finals, but I certainly think he will be viewed as, you know, among the very best players in the league if they don't win the finals, because that was the whole point of him going to Golden State, was to push, you know, get them back to a championship team. So
I agree. And by the way, they look great with him.
Mm-hmm.
They do. They look great.
Yes, they do.
Thank you, David. See you soon.
Okay, guys.
David Aldridge, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Wow, this sounds like Sleepwalk by Santo and Johnny
from
60 years ago.
I always feel that this would sound a little like the Wonders when they were playing at that pizza joint.
Yeah. Oh, no, the Surf Shack. Isn't that what it's called?
Surf Shack?
Yeah. Greg sends this in, and he says, one of my bandmates sent me an MP3 of a song, Crystal Cove, from our last album. The album was called Treasures. The name of the group is the Aqualads. How cool is that?
It's pretty
the
good.
Aqualads.
Not quite Aquaman, but Aqualads.
Right. Perhaps I'll see your crew at Chatter when the Aqualads play D.C. at the end of August. We are from Charlotte, the ancestral home of instrumental surf music. So somebody asked me the other day, actually, could we have a band here? And I said, I didn't think we had the room to have a band. And they said, well, what about just like a couple of people? And I said, I don't think
we're zoned for that.
Oh, is that right? So we can't have music?
I think because it's a neighborhood and you have offices upstairs.
Oh, okay. So then that's
you,
a better answer.
You couldn't
answer.
Have just like a guy with an acoustic guitar
can't
even in the corner?
That.
I don't think anyone's going to stop you.
I've got a friend named Paul, and he's got a friend named Art who sing. Brilliant voice.
Yeah, we could do that.
Maybe we should get them
I'm very thrilled today. We have a very nice breakfast crowd.
Nice breakfast
very
crowd.
Very thrilled. They spilled that into the bar.
Yeah, for eating breakfast.
Very, very nice. So we should do news now. But before we do news, Michael, if anybody who is like the Aqualads and they want to send music in, how do they do it?
They can join the conversation by emailing jingles at tonykornheisershow.com.
And are we selling anything still, us, our website?
Sure.
What is our website,
our
by the
sales
way?
Sales have slowed down recently. There is still a discount code for some hats, and if it's as cold where you are as it is in the studio,
studio's cold.
You still might want a TK Show sweatshirt.
Yeah.
And you can go to shop.tonykornheiser.show.com and check that out.
Tonykornheiser.show.com.
What is our website?
Tonykornheiser.com.
What is This Show Stinks these days? Is that just our
Twitter
email
handle,
site?
At This Show Stinks is a Twitter handle.
Yes, our
that,
email
that
site.
That tries to stay away from politics and general trolling.
Okay.
And we wanted to talk about what's our snap face cold sign?
The InstaChat.
InstaChat.
Our InstaChat is 3. We're Insta. Oh, so a guy actually said to me the other day, I won't reveal his name, but I'm involved in a project, a little bit of a project about Dan Jenkins. Dan is getting honored by the University of Texas. Not his alma mater, TCU, but Dan's papers are going to be collected by the University of Texas.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was involved with somebody who wants me to do an interview for it, which I'm happy to do. And he said that he could get in touch with me by Skype or InstaFace, and I wrote back saying, no, why don't you just call me?
No, just FaceTime.
Just call me.
Send me a telegram.
Yeah, I don't want to do any of those things. All right, do you have news?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony, and today's newscast is brought to us by the little shrimps that live in Rock Creek Park and the little owls that live in Rock Creek Park, because they may have successfully delayed the building of the Purple Line long enough for U.S. District Judge Richard J. Leon to issue his ruling
in all of this, and he says, listen.
This ruling only makes 100% sense.
Yes.
Only 100%.
Yes. What he said, he ordered Maryland officials yesterday to further scrutinize the potential impact of Metro's declining ridership on the future Purple Line. Now, this will further delay the construction,
good,
which will cost the state of Maryland an absurd amount of money and may kill this project.
Let me just say this about the Purple Line, which you know I don't believe in on any level. It is impossible for me to believe that you would not look at the Metro system, where they brag that they have fewer fires this year than last year.
It's amazing.
Yeah, they brag
actually
about that. And their ridership decline is stunning. And they keep raising prices, which leads to further ridership decline. It is amazing to me that you would not take that into account while attempting to build essentially a new subway line.
However,
good for Richard Leon.
However, Metro would come back at you and say, we've had fewer fires this year.
That's right, fewer. But you've had a substantial amount of fires, yes, and nobody's safe when they walk in there.
It's a terrible product right now. It used to be, I mean, when I moved here, it was a quality of life thing. It was like I could get to the office I could walk out my door and be at the office reliably in 25 minutes. And it's not that way anymore.
No, because it's closed all the time. It's like the airport in
Binghamton.
And
the escalators. Start on the escalators.
Closed for an entire month.
Get it figured
Unbelievable.
Out.
Unbelievable. The airport in Binghamton is closed for May.
Really?
It's closed. What?
We're on vacation.
It's closed for May. We found that out.
Wow.
I don't know. Nobody seems to know
why. Well, it would seem reasonable, like if you drew an analogy with a sports league. It's like, get it right, and then talk about it.
There's another part of this thing with the Purple Line that needs to be mentioned.
What's that?
And that is that the governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, and a lot of people voted for him thinking he was against the Purple Line, but he came out for the Purple Line. And then he attacked this judge personally, this Judge Leon, said he belonged not to the country club
so-called
that is involved
judge
in this,
hashtag
and then attacked his wife for being politically involved or something like that. And this judge is now telling him to eat it.
He essentially said he was dragging it out to get more money for his country club buddies.
Well,
just to put a wrap on this, Maryland officials have said that if by June 1st they have no foreseeable path to resolve the lawsuit,
they'll just go to the first game of the NBA Finals.
They would have to suspend much or all of the rail lines planning and design work because the state money would run out. The state would then have about 60 days before it would have to cancel the project.
I'm biased on this one. Everybody knows it.
And that move would cost them more than
$800. That's not the best story.
June 1st, same deadline for the chatter sign,
get to the driver story.
Oh, Scott Dixon and Dario Franchitti?
Dario Franchitti, who was an early guest on PTI and was one of the great, he's a great guest.
Ashley Judd?
Wasn't he?
Married at the time to Ashley Judd. I don't know if they're
not
still married.
No,
But I will tell you that race car drivers, IndyCar drivers, NASCAR drivers, good guests, IndyCar drivers, great guests.
Really?
Oh, great.
In what way?
They just say anything. They're out
with
there
a great accent,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and
Dario
Franchitti's got a Scottish. He's Scottish.
Right, yes,
it's an Italian name. He's Scottish.
Scottish.
Listen to this. Go ahead, tell the story.
So Scott Dixon and Franchitti were at a Taco Bell drive-thru Sunday
night. Now, the Indy is coming up this weekend.
Right.
Memorial Day weekend.
Is the Indianapolis 500. And apparently, there was a big crew of guys back, you know, wherever they're staying, and say, hey, can you guys go out and get us some food?
I buy you fly.
Yeah, so Franchitti and Dixon and Dixon's wife went out to the local Taco Bell. It was about 9:40.
Live
race car
Moss,
drivers
baby.
Do.
Whoa, Live Moss!
Are you even allowed at the Taco Bell drive-thru before 11 p.m.? I didn't know it was
that's
open.
That's a very good point. And Dixon, by the way, is sitting on the pole for the Indy 500.
Yeah.
So
sounds painful.
He's sitting on the pole, but a little lighter in the wallet.
Yes. Two males, aged 15 and 14, apparently
the scariest
approached the
kind,
car,
actually.
Yes.
And took credit cards as well as the wallet.
Guns. They had guns.
Yes.
Can I ask the obvious question here?
Sure.
You have two. They're in a car. You have the guy sitting behind the wheel is one of the greatest, whoever, it doesn't matter which one it is, one of the greatest high-speed drivers in the history of mankind.
Small club.
He can make that car do anything. He should have just blown right
Geeled
through
out of there.
There,
right?
Absolutely. That's stunning to me that he didn't do that.
Well, I think with guns, don't you just, and your wife in the car, you just say.
Just give them the money.
Give them the money. We've got more, you know.
Who cares?
And
it's only money.
The kids were
Look at what you threw away on this place.
No
one even had a gun to your head.
I hope they're caught.
Yes, about 30 minutes after the robbery.
Celebrating.
Officers stopped the car. The passenger fled.
Wait. They're driving at 15 and 14?
Apparently so.
Oh, wow.
Apparently they got in line right behind these guys at the drive-thru and tried to pay with their credit cards.
come on.
No, that's it. I'm kidding.
Okay. I was like, I don't see that here. I get wrong things all the time. So, but no, apparently the passenger fled, and you'll love this. He was apprehended not by police, but by a police dog. And that's always fun to watch happen. So,
also,
yeah.
Sounds worse than sitting on the pole.
You're right about the guns, but I would have, if anybody could have blown through there, it's one of these two guys.
Yeah. Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah. So, okay, what else?
Obviously, some troubling news that happened last night in Manchester, England, my actually old stomping grounds, at the end of an Ariana Grande concert, an explosion went off, which authorities now believe was a suicide bomb. ISIS has taken responsibility for this, saying members planted bombs in the middle of crowds. I think they have, I'm trying to get the exact number of...
21, I thought, were dead.
It's 22 and 59 injured in this bombing, which... I mean, they're all sad on every single level, but this one seems to be the victims mostly
kids
and the parents.
Kids at a concert.
And the parents of the kids waiting outside. As we've heard, Tori dropping her kids off for some sort of event, the parents wait outside, and then as this concert was ending, people fled out and faced this bomb.
Terrible.
Yes,
What else?
Some good news in Washington, D.C., Northwest. Wegmans apparently is coming to the district.
For people who don't know what Wegmans is, Wegmans is a supermarket chain that was started in Rochester, New York. It has a lovely franchise in Binghamton, New York. People go all day to the Wegmans. They come in the morning. There's a lot of food that a lot of food is sold. A lot of food is given away. People sit. You've been.
I mean, they usually have a great food bar. Like if you want to go in.
My first job at a newspaper was in Corning, New York. Binghamton and not only Wegmans. They not only had a Wegmans. It is not an overstatement to say that it was kind of the social center of that town. Not so much in an old-time grocery thing, but they had an excellent like pasta bar and like the place to eat was beautiful.
It's an all-day deal.
It's just a great brand.
Yeah, now they're usually giant stores.
Huge.
They're usually like on the Walmart level. They're very big stores. But they are going to build one and won't be ready for a long time, 2022.
Yes, that's
right.
But
they're going to build one on Wisconsin Avenue. They're going to build one where we are sitting now, I would say less than a mile, maybe at most a mile from here.
Right.
A mile from here.
3,900 block.
You're going
we're at like 5,200.
As you're going south on Wisconsin Avenue, be on the right-hand side.
Be on the right-hand side.
It's going to be, by Wegman standards, very small, but by D.C. standards, probably the biggest supermarket in town. Bigger than the dress-up Safeway.
Yeah, bigger than the social Safeway, it says.
The P Street Whole Foods is pretty big.
Is that big?
It's pretty big.
Yeah.
And you said it'll be here just before the chatter sign? Is that the date?
Yeah, 2022. It's going to be, I guess, where Sidwell Friends is, like right around that
Cross
area?
Cross the street.
Well,
isn't
it the Fannie Mae, which is moving into the old post site.
Yeah.
15th and L.
Yeah.
The store, it says, will be twice the size of the Whole Foods market in Logan Circle. Is that the
one?
Yeah.
It's bigger than that, but
it's small for a Wegmans.
Yes.
Right.
I can't emphasize this enough. You don't go there just to shop.
It's an experience in some way.
You know who's a huge fan of Wegmans is Kip Sheeman.
Is he?
Kip Sheeman raves about it all the time.
They're really nice. And it's a family-owned store. Started by a guy named Danny Wegman. Right.
1.3 miles away from Chatter.
Okay, so I was close.
Colleen Wegman, current CEO. So
that's
family.
Good. I won't be here.
You'll be long gone at that point.
Not 2022.
Is that it?
That's it.
We need servers.
Sound pretty well,
if
I guess.
If you're a kid and you want a job.
Yeah, come on by.
Yeah, we need
Wait
servers.
Tables. It's fun.
Okay, that's it. I just wanted to get that quick plug in.
It'll prep you for your job at Wegmans.
That's exactly right. But you got to wait five years for that. All right, we will take a break. When we return, we will have Old Guy Radio. And I'll tell... some Binghamton stories, a couple of Binghamton stories.
Right.
It's things that I learned.
Great.
I learned stuff. I'll just say this now. At my age and with my disinclination to learn anything, it's rare that I go somewhere and learn stuff. And I learned academic stuff that I was very interested in. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Me Undies ad, and here's where you want to get to in your dotage. You want to be on a podcast selling underpants. I think everybody wants to get to that point. Elevate your underwear game to the next level with Me Undies. You've perfected your wardrobe, but what about the stuff not everybody gets to see? If you've been settling for store-bought underwear 5-packs, I have something that will change your life for the better, and that is Me Undies. What's the first thing you put on? The last thing you take off? It is your underwear. Make your most important piece of clothing the best it can be with MeUndies. Michael has these. Gary, you have these.
I do.
I wore, Barry, you don't have these.
No, I do not.
We have to get some for Barry. Nigel, you have these?
Yeah, you can have some of mine.
Well, it's so game worn.
Nice. All right. Well, I'll see you after game the show, worn. I guess.
Yeah.
Not sure
why
where.
Wait? Why
what
wait?
Is MeUndies? Right just now. Seriously soft, feel good undies delivered right to your door. MeUndies, and they say this as if like it means something. Turn. I love it. They're designed in L.A. and made from sustainably sourced micromodal, a fabric three times softer than cotton. MeUndies softer than soft luxe undies come in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and adventurous patterns, so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. And guess what? You can save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. You don't need Sports Illustrated coming every week. You can get underpants once a month. If you're not ready for a subscription, that's okay. You can still save. And that is because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our special URL, MeUndies.com/TonyK. Get 20% off your first pair. Go ahead. Take the bold step and revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, I went off book on that. I think I did well. Once again, that's MeUndies.com/TonyK. MeUndies.com/TonyK.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the day is Pinball Wizard. The fantastic beginning to this song. This song and the album it comes on, Tommy, the rock opera by The Who, was released 48 years ago today. In terms of critical commentary, I've seen the show. The first act is an adrenaline rush. It's really good. It's been revived a number of times. That move, that Peter Townsend move.
The window.
That's the spectacular move, isn't it?
Well, you've got that, and then you've got...
The music holds.
Did Daltrey swing the microphone?
And killed everybody in the front row.
Exactly.
The music is still good. They're an anthematic rock band. The most famous anthematic rock band is U2, but they're better than U2. And this is what they did. They created stadium rock and roll. The Who did. There should be no question about that in anybody's mind.
And
it's really
this,
good.
Was this album, did this sort of start off, I mean, I don't want to give credit to like Pink Floyd, but this was like the, maybe, I guess Sgt. Pepper was like the first concept album, but this was took that to another level, right?
It was actually a rock opera, and everybody tried to do it, and nobody with as
you
much success.
Right.
And so people stopped after about 4 or 5 years. And
mercifully.
Leave this alone. We're professionals. Do not try this at home. Right. By the way, we have a very big crowd today, and I'm very happy we have a big crowd. We even opened up seats at the bar, and two of the morning anchors from Channel 9 are here. Mike Heideck is here, and Jan Jefko.
Nice.
So that's very, very nice.
How about that?
They want to do a podcast here. I've talked about this before. The problem is
they want to do it
they're
now.
Done at 7 in the morning,
right.
And they want to do it when we're doing it. Mm. And they could if they paid me $500,000.
Sure, we'd love to make that. Okay.
And that way I would get paid for doing nothing and split the money with a lot of people and be very, very happy.
Well, like, can't they come, have breakfast, a few drinks, and then,
and then get on the air.
And loop it up.
Yeah, and then get on the air. So I wanted to talk about not so much the doctorate, but some of the things that happened in Binghamton that I learned, because as I said earlier in the show, at my age, I don't usually learn anything anymore. I'm unwilling to learn something. But in this particular case, being around academia for the first time in a long time, I learned a bunch of stuff. I don't know if people will find this interesting, but I found this very interesting.
It's your show.
That I was talking to people who were deans, and I was asking about all of these people that earned doctorates, not my doctorate, a real doctorate. They spend 5, 6, 7 years. They publish. They do something of a scholarly nature, and then they earn their doctorate. And I said, "So, do you?" Meaning the people at Binghamton in positions to hire, do you hire these people? And I was told the man's name was Florence, right, Michael, the dean who I was talking to about this.
I believe so.
And he said, "No, we push them away." And I said, "You push them away?" He said, "No, we don't hire them at all. Not at all." Because they know us too well, and we know them too well, and so nothing innovative in particular is going to happen anymore.
Wow.
Because they've been here for a long time. So we push them away, and it's sort of like they hope that they will pollinate other schools. In other words, if the product of Binghamton is good and it goes to other schools, that enhances the reputation of Binghamton. I said, do you ever hire them back? I said, we might. 10 or 12 years down the road, we might hire them back, but we don't want – it felt like pushing the birds out of the nest. And I had no idea, because I would think, wow, they're doctors now. They're really good. They've achieved everything they can achieve, and you get pushed away.
Particularly interesting to somebody who's done a television show with the same partner for going on 2 decades.
Yeah, would never push anybody away. Yeah, right. I mean, and not only that, but a podcast that started as a radio show where we have the same people on all the time, because I like those people. I like those people.
That's some stale bread right here.
It always seems stimulating to me. And I'm a sort of afraid of everything new in my life. So that was one thing.
I'm assuming that was Associate Dean Dr. Florence Margai.
Yes.
Associate Dean of Harper College.
By the way, did we tell the story about the one guy who announces? Did we tell the announcing story yesterday?
No.
Okay,
no.
So there's one guy. There are 7 ceremonies in 3 days.
Wow.
And over the course of that period of time, counting master's winners and doctoral winners and undergraduates that become graduates, you have to announce something like 5,000 names. And I'm sure this is way bigger at larger public schools.
Sure. Yeah.
This University one guy, Michael, who's a linguist, does all the names. And the way it works...
He reads them, you mean like when they cross the stage type thing?
Yes. Everybody has their name, a name tag. They hand it to Michael's assistant, who hands it to Michael, who says the name. He is a linguist. He knows a lot of languages. He said, by the way, the hardest language is Turkish, because so many consonants in Turkish are not pronounced.
And well, look at Erdogan's name.
Well, this is what I said about... Yeah. I said for years I called the basketball player Hito Turkoglu,
right.
And I didn't understand why people were calling him Turkoglu.
Right.
Well, I said, there's the G in there. He's Turkoglu. Well, no. G's, for example, what is the point of having a G if it is not... Like, your name would be Ari.
Cool.
You know?
Ari.
Yeah.
I have razors named after me, right?
Now, I mean, I will say that I've always considered the great test for people of those ilk, just handing them my last name and saying, can you do this on your first try?
You'd be easy.
Yeah, you would be easy for a linguist.
Let me tell you what he said was the hardest thing. He said when the students themselves cross out their names and write it for me phonetically,
They believe to be phonetically.
What they believe to be phonetically, they ruin it. This guy, how much of a stud was this
guy?
That's cool. And between ceremonies, cool, drinking straight pineapple juice, because it's good to soothe your
throat. So after you received your honorary degree, Friday night we have a wonderful dinner back up on the hill on campus. It's
Anderson Center.
It's the honorary recipients, and it's the senior faculty. It's a very sort of buttoned-up event, but fun. You know, you're having a glass of wine, talking. Dad's hearing the story. Dad's face lights up as this linguist starts to say some of the better names
that
he's encountered. Say one. So he gives
one.
Dad's like, what's the hardest name? Or what's the funniest name? You ever break out laughing? He goes, well, there is one name, Dog Do. And Dad just starts wildly laughing at this inappropriate time at this beautiful dinner
ceremony.
Somebody
who doesn't want to learn anything new, Dog Do is particularly funny.
How's that spelled? I wonder.
And I said, you don't put an accent on it. He goes, no, straight ahead. Dog Do.
Straight ahead.
It's just fabulous. I also got to meet, did we talk about this yesterday?
You teased it.
Barry, are you familiar with the either Republic or Nation or country of Palau?
I am not.
You have no idea where or what Palau is.
I mean, I would guess Southeast Asia.
I would look
Asia
out there and just say, just raise your hands. Anybody know where Palau is? Or you do? How come you know?
World War II battle.
Well, Palau is either a single island or a chain.
No, it's an archipelago.
A group of islands
whatever it is.
In the South Pacific.
It
is not near anything, and it was strategic in World War II.
Micronesia.
On
the way to Japan. One of the islands that they have.
On the way. Depends on where you go. Not from PTI.
It's 3 hours.
So if you're going to go to PTI,
off of Connecticut Avenue.
It's 3 hours by air from anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
From anything. You can look it up.
Over 500 islands, part of the Micronesia region in the Western Pacific.
What's the total population of Palau?
According to the 2015 World Bank, 21,291.
That's it. So an average Nats crowd is bigger than Palau.
Yep.
Okay, it's bigger than Palau. And I met the ambassador, and she's a Binghamton graduate.
Oh,
and I believe her name is Amy Hyatt. Is that right, Michael? Amy Hyatt?
I actually never met her, so I'll trust you.
And all I wanted to do was talk about this, about being an ambassador. She's a career diplomat. This is not one of those places where you necessarily are appointed. It's not...
Amy Hyatt, that is correct.
Yeah, it's not Caroline Kennedy becoming the ambassador to Japan and going through a Senate hearing and confirmation. Career diplomats are sort of confirmed by the Senate, you know, long before they're appointed to a certain spot. This is probably among of all independent nations, and we had it, I think, as a trust once or a protectorate, and now it's an independent nation. It's probably in the bottom five of population. I think we looked this up, Michael. Wasn't Liechtenstein one of them, and Monaco was one of them, and they don't have. There's no ambassador.
What's
to Monaco.
That little country in between Spain and France?
Andorra. Right. I think this is. I think Andorra may be bigger than this. I think it may be bigger than this, and so she's. It's 20,000 people, and I of course asked the only question that I care about, which is this. So when they call you back to Washington, do they send a G5 for you? Because that's what I'm thinking. My orientation towards life is, did you get the G5? And she says, no, you go coach. You go coach.
You're the ambassador Palau.
And you go
coach.
It's
a few connecting flights.
And when you stay in Washington, so you at the Ritz? No.
Tony, according to worldatlas.com, Palau, the third least populous country in the world, and yes. Of course, it's sort of a trick question because Vatican City is number one a population of 451. So only...
We do have an ambassador to the Vatican, though.
Oh, yeah.
The United States has an ambassador because a guy I grew up with, Louis Nigro, was once the ambassador to the Vatican.
Ray Flynn, former mayor of Boston.
Isn't it
Gingrich or Gingrich's wife or something like
Calista,
that?
Calista...
Yeah, is it not?
I don't know.
Tuvalu is second in the South Pacific with a population of just under 10,000.
Wow. So I said, well, what is it like? Now, we looked at pictures of, I mean, I
gorgeous,
looked at pictures
sure,
since
right?
at work. Well, you can look at pictures of it. I said, well, what is it like? How are you treated? And you're treated very well. She said they take pictures of me all the time. Like when I'm kayaking, they
what
take pictures
of me. What do you
do,
though, other than kayak? I mean, if you're the ambassador to Palau, what is your day?
I don't know.
I mean, I think it's kayak.
Great question. I'll hit TripAdvisor to do in Palau.
I would think that you have to. I mean, she knows the president of Palau. I think you're consulted on things. It was strategic then. I don't know if we're going to fight those kinds of wars again. So I don't know how strategic it is. But I was fascinated that she was from my school and she became, you know, an ambassador.
Wow, that's this really actually cool. Looks pretty cool.
She said she has a daughter who is in school in Cairo, and a son who lives in Helsinki, and I realized she's not of this anymore.
You don't really right. like you're a career, leaving Upper Northwest.
You're a career diplomat. You're not here anymore.
Right, right, right.
Your whole life is somewhere
citizen
else.
Citizen of the world.
Yeah.
You got the Milky Way, which is a natural occurring mud bath. You got Jellyfish Lake.
Whoa, a natural occurring, so you don't have to pay for it?
Right.
It just happened?
Jellyfish Lake, you got Rock Island,
you know,
Southern
I've got a
Lagoon.
Mud bath until we put the sod in. I had a mud bath in the front yard.
Right. How's that holding up,
dog.
By the way? How's the sod holding
she
up?
She was running the fence today, and I ran out there in the morning, and I tried to kill her.
Scram.
You know, just get off. There's a lot of sod here. It cost a lot of money. What else do they have in Palau?
They got Nagarmau Falls.
They got Pissin Museum.
The what?
Excuse you?
Etpison.
Yes, they do. The Etpison Museum.
Yeah, that's how I would have pronounced
also
it.
Also, baseball. Etpison. Baseball is apparently very popular.
Their minor league team. Wow, they got aquarium. The Rumble Ponies. The Palau Rumble Ponies.
The Palau National Baseball
Shopping
Team
Center.
Won the gold medal at the 1990 and 1998 and 2010 Micronesian Games.
That's fantastic.
Do they have a shutdown closer?
Yeah.
Make a deal.
A little bit of a back-end problem there.
So I just thought that...
That's very cool.
And Michael got to play. Tell him about you got to play at Tillinghast.
So we were hosted at Binghamton Country Club Saturday morning, and I won't go too much into the detail, but it's one of the original country club is one of the 20 oldest country clubs
in the nation.
Neat. And they brought in, it was originally a 9-hole course, they brought in Tillinghast, and they have a letter online that he wrote to the membership group, the board just basically saying, we got to blow this thing up.
Yeah, your course is worthless as is.
And they now have just a totally charming 18-hole course that fits into the hills and the valleys and just has some of the most difficult green complexes. And they're in a transition where they're trying to bring back some of these original Tillinghast features, but they're obviously in the middle, excuse me, and they're not as big as, say, Philadelphia Cricket Club,
which did a similar
renovation
and
a couple
Wingfoot
years ago.
And Baltusrol, yes. Which he designed.
Baltimore right. Country Club as well. You have San Fran Golf out in California. So they're definitely doing this more piecemeal over a couple years, but they're bringing back some of these original fescued mounds. They're bringing back the Great Hazard, which is one of the biggest Tillinghast features on a par 5. But you just see a lot of echoes of these other very well-known golf courses on just this small, charming little place.
So I was afraid... in taking Michael there, that he would think the course was a dump and be angry. And instead, you were captivated by it. You loved it.
So I love a golf course that you have to be strategic on every single shot. And with these Poana greens, with the growing temperatures that they have in western upstate New York.
Central New York.
Okay, well, upstate to me.
Yeah, upstate.
You just have a recipe to get firm, fast conditions, and you have to, even with a wedge in your hand, you're landing shots short of the green, you're playing 20, 30 feet of break, and it was just a lot of fun.
So that made me very, very happy.
That's great.
It made me happy.
By the way, I don't point this out about Palau. They should put some outlet stores there. There's no corporate sales tax and no property tax, so maybe the next beach house can be in Palau.
How am I going to get there?
Well, again, you start PTR, you go down Connecticut.
Palau's going to be underwater before the chatter signs up.
Right. Don't take a break. We'll come back with a jingle and some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show. DC teams lose.
Always it's true. Don't be confused.
Fabulous. This is, that's the song, you know, the parody of the song Cruisin',
yeah.
But not the original Cruisin'. This is the one by Huey Lewis and Gwyneth Paltrow. That was in a movie, I'm pretty sure.
Duets.
Kirsten Ohnstad did the lyrics on this, and Jason Fuse and KJ did the vocals, which is wonderful. I am saying happy birthday to Logan McGuire.
Yes.
I am doing that.
Happy birthday, Logan.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to David Aldridge from Turner for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, MeUndies and SeatGeek. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Dr. Matthew Picard in Kensington, Maryland, gave me a present, which I haven't opened yet, which I assume is a thermometer or a stethoscope, which would be great. Claire Natola solicits blatant provocation in yesterday's show opening was the last straw, inquiring about the status of the new signage at Chatter with faux concern that fooled no one. Come on, man. Enough was enough, and this egregious dereliction in restaurant labeling needed to be rectified. I apologize to you and your partners that I didn't take matters into my own hands months ago. Robin Hood? No. The Equalizer? Hardly. I'm just one little who saw a wrong and had to right it. My black marker on the reverse side of giant calendar pages connected and secured with packing tape certainly won't be confused with high art, but it was nonetheless created with love and given in gratitude for years of entertainment. Thank you for accepting it with such graciousness. Thank you also to Johnny Fox and Jeff Stevens for their assistance with the new signs installation and to Bobby Gottfried for staying inside so we didn't lose our precious trivia table. If Saliz only had the same idea, the restaurant could have been labeled Shinebox after all. Michael, is there a way that they can find this image on Twitter or however that works?
They can see that on at This Show Stinks Twitter feed.
Okay. From Brian Parsons in Silver Spring, Maryland. After watching Brockmire last night, I had a flashback to a Wednesday evening last October. I took the kids to Buffalo Wild Wings for dinner where we bumped into Johnny Holiday. He asked the kids if they enjoyed playing soccer and what other sports they play. 5 minutes later, in the same pitch and cadence, he said, "Welcome back to the Maryland Coaches Radio Show." It was fabulous.
That's Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny can do that.
Oh, yeah.
It says Weh, I guess is the name, in Billings, Montana. Here's an idea for the Johnny O Father's Day promo code for you. Pony K. It's only five wide and perfectly encapsulates the spirit of the holiday for you and Michael. Maybe they could do a specially embroidered logo on the shirts of a man riding a dog-sized horse.
Yes,
nice one.
Lovely.
From John Duchamp in Windsor, Ontario, I was listening to the show last week where in the news, Nigel was talking about the guy who wore the Home Depot apron to help himself to some product.
Yes.
In a past life, I spent 15 years working for Home Depot Canada, and this happened many times. In fact, it happened enough that the policy for changing your aprons is to completely shred your old one when you're done with it. That way, this sort of thing does not happen. As always, I enjoy listening and keep up the great work. From Brian in Silver Springs, loved your commencement address. It was all about you with a punchline now not limited to Murray and St. Albans graduates. I should say the punchline.
Yes.
I looked at the people and...
This went over really well.
Did you think... I think it did.
I had a different view into the audience.
Oh.
Share it.
Okay. So I said, at the end, I had talked about this story about almost flunking a course, and I said how Harvey Stenger, the president of Binghamton, said, tell that story, but then leave the kids with something optimistic. Leave them with something hopeful that, you know, that they would have success in their lives like you had in your life, that they could maybe have your job. And I said, Harvey, stop.
No, they fraudulent.
They can't have my job and they can't have your job. And I said, but it got me to thinking, because people occasionally do come up to me and they say things that essentially go like this. You are so old. Surely there's something you've learned in your life. Surely there's some secret or some advice you could pass on to the rest of us. And I thought about it for a while, and it's inherent in this particular question. Do you have rich parents? And I said it again. No, do you have rich parents? And I said, I did not, but my children do. Because if you have rich parents, you can accomplish anything. And if you don't, even with this degree from this fine quality institution, you're going to be working for the Cornell kids. And that was my ending. So, and Michael did not like this?
We'll go into this off air.
Okay.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, I got the sense from watching online that I couldn't tell how it went over.
I thought
but,
it went
but
great.
It was like they didn't see it coming.
No.
So it was like the laughter was certainly delayed.
Well,
they're like, oh, boom. He just mic dropped.
Dare we say awkward?
Andrew Heck, Miami, Florida. Quote, I'm a better pitcher than a catcher. That's going on the Mr. Tony Tombstone. I'm not soon, I hope. Kurt Johnson from Berlin. I guess that Berlin.
Hit him.
I normally listen to podcasts during the day as I'm doing other things like commuting, jogging, or even dozing off at night. As a sign of just how much your show has seeped into my subconscious, yesterday I came to work for a double shift, and when my coworkers asked if I packed anything to eat, for reasons I cannot understand, I answered them, I brought a banana, but in the melody of I have a piano. They all looked at me like I was insane. Thank you for the psychological conditioning. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You know what ought to happen to them? They ought to be stabbed by cocktail forks.
Andy Poley.
Mm-hmm.